You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Atlantic and Coastal, the Athletics ACC podcast. I am your Virginia Tech football beat writer, Andy Bitter, and the host of Atlantic Coastal, coming to you after week one. In a way, we're all winners with college football being back. In a more accurate way, the ACC was not a winner on the opening weekend. When we have this calamitous of an opening weekend for a league, we need to bring in the big guns to help put everything into perspective. We have Matt Fortuna, our National Football College writer at The Athletic, co-host of The Shamrock, does a great job on that. But Notre Dame is no longer in the conference. We'll still get to him in this one. But Matt, I have to ask you, that was a pretty rough weekend for the ACC. Sum it up for us, how bad it was.
Yeah, you sounded a little bit like Commissioner Jim Phillips in your intro, talking about how we're all winners. And then I thought you were introducing Commissioner Jim Phillips with that intro. I appreciate the grand entrance there. As Phillips said on the broadcast at Florida State Sunday night, I'm bullish on the ACC, and he kind of left it at that. I'm not as bullish on the ACC. I thought that Georgia-Clemson game going in, I think we all kind of thought, you know, the loser of this is not out of the playoff, but Georgia will have a much easier time getting back into it than Clemson will. Because if Georgia lost the opener and ran through the SEC, they're getting in as a one-loss SEC champion. I think Clemson probably would be in the same category, but the ACC is not the SEC. I mean, Clemson's playing UConn in another non-conference game here. UConn is a 33.5-point home underdog against Purdue this weekend and just had their coach resign after two games into the season. He tried to retire. They would have let him retire. So, look, I still think Clemson is good. I mean, like, you don't think any worse of Brent Venables' defense coming out of last week, that's for sure. The offense was not exactly what we expected. I'm not sure we've ever seen a performance. We definitely haven't seen a performance like that from Clemson's offense since Tony Elliott and Jeff Scott took over in 2015. The most recent I can think of is when they lost at Georgia Tech in 2014, with Chad Morris as the play caller. I think Deshaun Watson tore his ACL in that game, and they lost 28-6. But Miami, I kind of expected that. Like, it's Alabama. I'm not going to knock them for it. I hope for their sake they don't let this derail their season the way so many week one Alabama opponents tend to do. Cough, cough, Duke, which hasn't been the same program, I will remind you, since that Alabama opener in 2019. And we saw that Friday night. I was not terribly surprised by that. Charlotte's a good football team. It was the first time they ever hosted a Power 5 team on their campus. Duke, by all accounts and by our own four eyes, the last 2 years has not been a very good team, which is a shame because I think we all on a personal level love David Cutcliffe and hope he can write an appropriate exit strategy for himself, whether it's this year or next year, and it doesn't look like it's going all swimmingly in that department right now in Durham. And then the other one, the one that surprised me more than anything, was Georgia Tech losing to Northern Illinois at home. You knew that was a long rebuild ahead for Jeff Collins. They seem to have steps in the right direction last year with an opening win at Florida State, with a rout of Louisville on a Friday night primetime game. And this was year three at home against an NIU team that, quite frankly, I thought Thomas Hammock might be in the hot seat coming into this year. They didn't win a game last year, and they have a really tough schedule ahead of them with Michigan and Wyoming. And I would not have been surprised if NIU was no more than a 3-win team this year. And maybe they are better than I thought they were, but I definitely did not see Georgia Tech losing at home to them on opening night. So I think I covered it all. I mean, we could talk North Carolina, but that's positive in your neck of the woods, so we can get to that in a little bit with Virginia Tech. But it was an ugly opening weekend. I mean, there's no way to put a lipstick on this pig. It was really, really bad for the ACC. They always had Clemson to hide behind. They probably still will, but it's not going to be as smooth as it was in recent years.
Yeah, let's sum it up here. The ACC went 7-7 in the opening week, which is fitting because ACC fans might need a stiff drink after how that had played out. The three ranked teams in the opening week of the top 25 all lost: Clemson, UNC, Miami. Duke lost to a Charlotte team that went 2-4 last year. Georgia Tech lost to a Northern Illinois team that went 0-6 last year. Virginia Tech was a bright spot. It came at the expense of a top 10 UNC team. Florida State was encouraging in a loss. This is one of the moral victories you're taking from the first week is that a team lost. And to top it all off, as you mentioned at the top, Clemson loses a game, hands an SEC team a major trump card that might be an important piece when you're looking at the playoff picture later in the season. I want to start talk a little bit more in depth about that Clemson game because, you know, they played really good defense in that game. I mean, they played them to a 3-3 draw defensively. If they don't throw that pick six, who knows exactly where this is going and how we're talking about this game today. There are problems on that offense, though. And I think we all kind of just assume that, you know, DJ Uiagalelei is going to come in and do what he did last year against Notre Dame, throw for 500 yards. Will Shipley and Justin Ross is back. And it just looked out of sorts. And you have to kind of wonder if that offensive line that has not performed that well the last couple of years is really catching up to that offense. I mean, this is a team that even with Travis Etienne last year did not run the ball very well, could not run it consistently. Are we starting to see sort of some cracks in the foundation where this offensive line has maybe been masked by a couple things, by Trevor Lawrence's brilliance and Deshaun Watson's before that? Is this catching up to this program?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I mean, I've said this before, and I'll say it again because it's doubly appropriate in light of Saturday night. I've never seen such an elite program that wins conference championships and makes college football playoffs year after year after year do it essentially in spite of their offensive line. It's just Mitch Hyatt was a four-year starter there and all everything, and he didn't even get drafted at left tackle. You know what I mean? Like, they just haven't performed to the level of a national championship contender on that front. And I know that's ironic because they've won multiple national titles during that era, but that's just the reality of the situation. I mean, last year, the first go around at Notre Dame, and you mentioned Trevor Lawrence, and I think this is one of the kind of overlooked parts of how good he was. DJ Uiagalelei was great at Notre Dame. His first career road start, threw for over 400 yards, 40 points, I think, including overtime, the Notre Dame opponent passing yards record. And I think Travis Etienne finished with like 32 yards on 20 carries or something absurdly low. Like, and the only thing really different the second time around was Trevor Lawrence in there instead of DJ Uiagalelei. And it was just a different offense. And I don't say this to, like, we're going to make these comparisons all year because that's just what you do when you lose a number one draft pick. And I don't say this to dog DJ too much because I think he's an excellent player. But that offense just hummed differently. We saw it when he first came in 2018. We saw it when he came back from COVID last year. He just is so decisive, gets rid of the ball so quickly, gets it to his receivers in space so quickly, completely neutralizes any potential disadvantage they have up front. And they're just such a well-oiled machine with him back there. And obviously they won a title without him before he got there with Deshaun Watson. They were really close a year before that, and they've had other good teams without him as well, including 2017 when they ended the regular season as the top team in the country. But I do wonder, as you said, is this an inflection point? Do you have to look in the mirror? Has the ACC been so poor that you haven't really allowed yourself to truly identify what your shortcomings are as a program? Because clearly it's been that front for a while. Never was that more obvious than on Saturday night. And the idea of Clemson scoring just 3 points and the offense essentially being responsible for giving Georgia 7 points and the deciding score is just not something I think any of us had in mind going into Saturday night. They didn't look great. I will say, all the praise I just gave Trevor Lawrence, they did not look great offensively or defensively in that game against Ohio State to close the season last year. That was about as all-around poor performance as I think you could possibly ever see from Clemson. And I think there was the optimist in Clemson fans' mind was saying, well, we didn't have our offense coordinator. He missed that game. with COVID. Like, things are different when you don't have your primary play caller there against Ohio State. Tony Elliott was back on Saturday night, and he had no answer for Kirby Smart and Dan Lanning. That was just an absolutely dominant performance from Georgia.
Well, this is what we do after week one, is we overreact, because that's what we have to do, and we've only had one data point, so that's what we're going to focus in on, and that's everything about it. Georgia's a pretty elite team. I mean, it's one of, you know, four or five teams every year that's going to be up there in the playoff hunt. They recruit at that kind of level.
They have the most talented roster in the country.
It's what, it's,
I mean,
it's,
I don't think there's any question
about
it. 19
5-stars on the roster, something like that.
It's,
I mean,
absurd.
That's what they do. They put together these incredible rosters. So that's a really good team. So we're judging Clemson against that team. Clemson's defense still looked very good. Looked like it was back after some of the issues that it had maybe at times last year. Could Clemson still turn this thing around and make the playoff? I mean, it's going to require running the table at this point. And honestly, you're probably going to be favored in every game from here on out in the season. Now, we'll see. You know, maybe this is an indication that Clemson is not quite what Clemson has been in the past. But how do you look at Clemson in relation to the ACC now?
I will say, because we're overreacting and because I've got three more days to pat myself on the back for this one until they blow it this week, I really liked NC State coming into this
year.
That's
the kiss of death. You have just given
it
the
was.
Kiss of death.
I gave him the kiss of death preseason. I was all on the Dave Doran bandwagon. They won 45-0 in their opener against former Clemson assistant Jeff Scott at USF. They open ACC play in 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks, September 25th, at home against Clemson. Those two coaches don't really love each other. Those games are always a lot closer than I think they should be. NC State fans will argue they've let Clemson off the hook in past years, and they've got a pretty sound argument in that department. If there was ever a good time to get Clemson, I do think it's the first month when they've already lost a game. They're still trying to figure themselves out offensively, and you're at home, and your expectations and your fan base, Wolfpack fans are crazy, are going to be at an all-time high. Like, that's the game I think I had circled beforehand as like the potential tripping point for Clemson ACC play, and I'm doubling down on that right now. And again, NC State plays an SEC team this week. I don't think it's a very good SEC team. It's Mississippi State, but it's also on the road at Mississippi State. It's a clanga, you know, Stark Vegas. It's a night game. Crazy things happen, and no program in the tenure of Dave Doran, I think, has had the ability to lose at least one game a year that they have no business losing. Which explains why they haven't won 10 games in a year yet, despite all their success. So I want to see them get through this week, but I really, really, really liked what I saw from NC State this week, and I'm more optimistic about them than I've ever been.
Yeah, that'll be definitely one we'll talk about in a couple weeks. We'll get to NC State. I want to hit on this week's matchups toward the end of the podcast here. I do want to shift gears to what I thought was the most entertaining game of the opening weekend. Notre Dame 41, Florida State 38 in overtime. Admittedly, I was watching this, and I was almost ready to turn it off. At one point, Notre Dame was up 18. Seems like maybe some of the points that the Seminoles were getting were kind of fluky in some sense. And then all of a sudden, a helmet comes off. Mackenzie Milton has to come to the game. The comeback had started before that, but then Milton adds to it. It gets to the overtime with the crazy, you know, did he throw an incomplete pass? The field goal makes the kick.
Yeah,
and you know, I'll defend Mike Norvell on this. Like, he's trying to make a 50-yard field goal, a 35-yard field goal, whatever it was. Every coach in the country would do that, so I can't fault him for that. And field goal kicker ends up missing it. Notre Dame makes the field goal to win. Brian Kelly executes his team. That's how it ended. That was that. That sums it up. What is your biggest takeaway on this game? Because I feel like we've seen Notre Dame in kind of a wild opener like this before, and we don't. Didn't quite know what to make of it with that Texas game a couple years ago. It was, oh, Texas is back, and then it turns out, no, Notre Dame and Texas were both terrible. Is this one where Florida State is kind of back, or are the Irish overrated here?
Yeah, poor Houston Griffith. He finally gets to start his senior year, and he actually had a really good game despite getting burned for a long touchdown in third and long in the third quarter, and then he was a guy who knocked off Jordan Travis's helmet and basically played the Mo Lewis to the New England Patriots, Drew Bledsoe, and allow the backup quarterback to come in and change everything for the opposition. I came out of that game with a lot more questions about Notre Dame than I had coming in. Marcus Freeman definitely won the offseason. He was the defensive coordinator hire that everyone wanted to get. Notre Dame outflanked LSU to get him. recruiting has been at an all-time high, and they have deservedly, you know, taken a victory lap with that, so to speak. They've earned a lot of praise for all the good stuff they're doing in the offseason. But there were always questions about this defense, particularly in the back end, and there were questions about, you know, how would Marcus Freeman coach up this group of players, because the system is completely different from what they were running under Clark Lea, who all he did was go to two college football playoffs in 3 years as a coordinator there with no experience whatsoever before he got hired, or promoted, I should say, to coordinator at Notre Dame. So there are a lot of questions, I think, about that defense. The linebacker group is supposed to be the deepest on the roster. They're now down multiple players for the season. They've quickly thinned out. They got after Jordan Travis in the first half. And then they went to a three-man front when Florida State was just kind of like, seemed like they were just, I don't know, trying to do anything, fall forward, get a few yards. I mean, they went for it on 4th-and-2 deep in their own territory earlier in that half. They didn't get it, and for all intents and purposes, the game was and should have been over then. And Florida State just kind of hung around, and then when Mackenzie Milton came in, he really exposed that secondary, I think. You know, we know Kyle Hamilton's going to be probably a top 10 pick, but everyone around him has a bit of a question mark next to their name. So it was not the Notre Dame team we've been used to seeing in the last 4 years. They always are really good up front. They always are automatic in third and short situations, and they've always played kind of a top-down approach defensively, where if they get the lead, they're comfortable and they can keep the ball in front of you and they can protect that lead. That was obviously not the case on Saturday night. Marcus Freeman has a lot of work to do, a lot of kinks to work out with his personnel to figure out who belongs where and what they need to be running when. Conversely, on the positive side, I had no idea Jack Cohn was that good. He was automatic on 3rd and 4th down. There were a couple deep shots they took for touchdowns that they connected on 3rd and short plays that, again, were automatic last year when you had a Joe Moore finalist, Joe Moore Award finalist offensive line and two elite running backs. I think that offensive line, I knew they were going to be green. I knew they were going to struggle early on in an environment like that when it was the first game for a lot of those guys. So I'm not as concerned about them moving forward, especially when they have as talented running backs as they have. But that defense is definitely a cause for concern, at least in the short term.
What do we make of Florida State? Because I thought this was an interesting spot that the Seminoles were in that I don't think historically you really ever find them in. They were the lovable underdog in this game. When is that ever the case? They had some moxie. You look at some of the players that they had on the field, and obviously they had the feel-good story with Mackenzie Milton. I think there was that. So there was the Bobby Bowden hanging over everything like that, and people talking about, oh, his spirit pushed this ball this direction or anything like that.
It was wide left, not wide right.
Jermaine Johnson, I thought, was really, really good, which it appears to be there's no shame in not starting for Georgia. If you're a defensive lineman there and you transfer somewhere else, you might be pretty dang good. I look at that team. They ran for a lot of yards. I feel like they had better quarterback play. I know Jordan Travis struggled a little bit throwing later in the game, but I feel like him and Milton combined just sort of gave that team perhaps some stability that has been lacking in recent years. Could that and the improvement they get from some of these transfers and just an older roster and you know, Mike Norvell being in his second year and actually have an off season make a big difference for this program that, you know, honestly looked rudderless last season?
Yeah, you know, feel good story, not just, you know, from the nation, but even from their fans. Again, that's a program that's won 3 national titles over the last 30 years and is not used to the down years they've experienced in recent years, but they got a walk-off standing ovation from their own fans in defeat, which I never thought I would see in Florida State. But it was a testament to the magic of that night, the power of having a full stadium after a year away from each other, and obviously what Mackenzie Milton did was just, you know, medical miracle, for lack of a better term. Mike Norvell's a really, really, really good coach. I don't think it was a question of if he would get this thing turned around. It was a question of when. And look, that offensive line, they played a lot better than they have in recent years. I'm still not sure how good they are. I mean, Jordan Travis was running for his life a lot in the first half. But Mike Norvell dialed up some great play calls. He took advantage of some poor tackling on Notre Dame. He caught them off guard with a couple big runs. The 3rd-and-long pass I mentioned earlier, I think it was a 61-yard touchdown pass that kept them into it, or gave them the lead, I should say, in the third quarter. was beautifully designed, getting Notre Dame strong safety and single coverage in the slot. That's a really good coaching staff. They have good players on the roster. I think they're going to figure it out. The question for me is, it's easy in hindsight to say, did you start the wrong quarterback? Because they look so great with Mackenzie Milton in there. I'm not saying that's not a fair question. I do think that was a perfect cocktail of like emotions, events, a defense that had probably let its guard down a little bit with an 18-point lead, and just a wave of momentum that you'll just never be able to recreate ever again this season. Like Mackenzie Milton coming back from a near leg amputation 3 years later, like on a national TV against Rudy's school. Like that was just like, you couldn't write that up any better. Can they recreate that spark? Can they keep that going on offense? Who's going to start moving forward? They weren't exactly clear this week. Both guys are or in the depth chart again. Now, I know they were again last week, but it sounded in hindsight like all along this was going to be Jordan Travis's job. How do they figure out that situation moving forward? And how do they, you know, the old adage, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. I'll say this, no one looked happier for Mackenzie Milton than Jordan Travis when Mackenzie went in there and started firing those bullets. I mean, that was really a sight to see and behold, and has to be encouraging for your Florida State fan. But is that going to keep up all season if they go with a two-quarterback system? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how Norvell sorts that out, but I do think having two decent options is better than not having any options, which is what they've had in recent years. So maybe I think Florida State has a bit more of a chance than I gave them before the season when I'm looking at that schedule. All right, we're nearly 21 minutes into this thing. We have not mentioned Virginia Tech's win over North Carolina. I know Hokies fans are listening to this going, this is a big first top 10 win since 2014. I don't need no mention. You got to talk about Clemson and Florida State first. And I apologize for that, but here we are at the game. The Hokies just completely befuddled Sam Howell in the opener. And I was there and I witnessed it. And I still don't quite believe how they did it, because I saw what this defense was last year and how out of sorts it was. And I know there were all sorts of extenuating circumstances with personnel and, you know, preparation in Justin Hamilton's first year. You didn't really have an off season and, you know, all the COVID things that went into everything. But I did not expect that. I did not expect them to hold this UNC offense to 46 fewer points and 300 fewer yards than last year's game. And they made Sam Howell just look really uncomfortable. Never looked comfortable in the pocket. Lots of pressure on him. He made uncharacteristic mistakes for him. That last interception where he's spinning out of a pressure and throwing it downfield. Just that's the kind of play you would expect a freshman quarterback to make, not a Heisman caliber candidate like he is. Does this make you think differently of the Hokies? I know I've sort of changed my thought a little bit about what the ceiling of this team might be just because this defense looks more legit. I'm curious what you thought about them coming into the season and where you think they could possibly go now.
Yeah, I don't know how you can't feel better and differently about the potential trajectory of the season if you're a Hokies fan. Now, I guess you couldn't, because it's a coastal and nothing makes sense. And, you know, the teams that look good 1 week end up laying eggs the next week and they all go 4-4 every year. And you pick a winner out of a hat, essentially. There were seven winners in 7 years, and then Notre Dame. Like, they gave up on the Coastal, essentially, after 7 years of Coastal chaos. First top 10 win since 2014. I mean, that was that Ohio State team that went on to win the national title that year. So if you're hanging on to a thread, North Carolina fans, that's the thread to hang on to as far as where you go from here. I was thoroughly impressed by that Virginia Tech performance defensively. Great call, greatly called game by Justin Hamilton. Awesome atmosphere. Awesome to see Lane Stadium full again, to see Enter Salmon, to see that place rocking. I will point back to what our friend Pete Thamel over Yahoo tweeted after the game, which was an annual reminder that no one in the history of college football has won more off seasons than Mack Brown. The guy has a way with words, a way with people, a way with recruits. He's done a great job at North Carolina, much better job than I ever thought he was capable of doing at his age. But I did personally have some questions about this team coming into this year. Now, I didn't see that happening. I'm not going to, you know, say I saw that. But they lost two unbelievable running backs. They lost two really good wide receivers. I was a believer in Sam Howell. I was not always a believer in that offense. They were always so inconsistent. Like, they lost games last year where they just didn't show up for a half, whether it was Florida State or Virginia or the second half of Notre Dame, although I would argue Notre Dame physically dominated them and took them out of the game that time around. I just did not think this was a program that was consistent enough to really make a serious run at the ACC. Whereas Virginia Tech, I pretty much written them off. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it seemed like last year Justin Fuente was going to lose his job, and he didn't. And it's so hard to get back up off the mat when you've basically been left for dead by your fan base. And if they lost that game, if they lost that game the way Vegas and everyone else thought they'd lose that game, it could have made for a very long drag of a season when you look at that schedule and some of the other opponents they have coming up. I mean, when Pete Sampson and I were going down Notre Dame's schedule a couple weeks ago on the Shamrock, we pointed to Lane Stadium and what a tough environment that could be. But we also said, hey, like, they could be reeling off a week one big defeat from a North Carolina team that put up a ton of points and yards on them last year. Who knows if they'll get up for that game. Now we're like, after the Florida State game, we're like, shoot, that might be Notre Dame's toughest game of the year going into Lane Stadium based on week one overreactions. I mean, it was such an enthralling performance from Virginia Tech that you have to come away encouraged. So, look, they don't have the easiest non-conference slate. Notre Dame going to Morgantown, which is never an easy place to play. It's going to be interesting monitoring that program moving forward. But I do hope for their sake they found something to build off in week one, and that those good vibes will help get everyone on the same page and help that program get back to humming the way they were 4 or 5 years ago when Justin Fuente looked like the best hire of that cycle, and it looked like there was not going to be any drop-off whatsoever from the Frank Beamer years.
Yeah, it is interesting how much the temperature can cool in a town after one top 10 win like that. I think what was interesting about this Virginia Tech team is last year Fuente pointed out several times the importance of practice, and this team needs to practice, and this program needs to practice, and they have that this offseason. And when you give Fuente an offseason to prepare for a season opener, he's pretty good in those type of games. He seems to have his team prepared and ready for those type of games. It's not a team that they recruit so well that they're just going to go out in the field and just out-talent you, but it feels like if you give them time and they have preparation, they can be a competitive program. And they did not have that last year. That was something that stood out quite a bit. So I'm curious to see how this team goes forward this year. I'm not going to go, oh, they're the new Coastal Division favorites or something like that, because I've seen them.
They have to be after week one.
But I've seen them follow up top 25 wins before and not play well. And we mentioned that 2014, I know it's a completely different team, but this program has kind of been like this for the last decade, is they have a big win like the Ohio State one. They come back the next week and lose at home to East Carolina. They're down 21-0 in the first quarter. I mean, that's just been the ebb and flow of this program lately. So I'm curious this week, they have Middle Tennessee, see if they can come out and have the kind of effort that you would expect them to have as a 20-point favorite in this game. I want to touch briefly on the Alabama trouncing Miami 44-13, because I don't know what else to say about this game. I mean, you schedule Alabama in an opener at a neutral site, and this is what you get. Like, I don't know why athletic departments and programs schedule the Crimson Tide, because this is what they do. They simply reload, they come out, they hammer you. Hopefully they don't break your program in the process. How are we feeling about Miami coming out of this? Do you even read anything into this, or you go, well, they just lost to the, you know, probable front runner for this year's national championship, and they do this to everybody?
Both. I mean, I understand the freak out if you're a Miami fan right now. I mean, Manny Diaz got the head coaching job at Miami because he was such a good defensive coach while he was a coordinator under Mark Richt there. And Miami's defense has not really impressed anyone. I mean, they played 3 ranked teams last year, and they gave up 500 or more yards in defeat in each one of those games, including more than 700 yards against North Carolina. And Manny Diaz took over the defensive play calling this year, and it was more the same against Alabama, even if that was to be expected. So I understand why you're pulling your hairs out right now if you're a Hurricanes fan. That said, as you alluded to, you just can't let this derail you as a program. I mean, it's comical at this point what Alabama does to programs on neutral sites. I mean, let's go back. 2016, they beat USC. I think it was 52-3 or something. And USC ended up starting 1-3 in Clay Helton's first full season. And if not for a quarterback switch to Sam Darnold, who knows where they go. Somehow Sam Darnold ends up saving them. They win the Rose Bowl and look like one of the best teams in the country at year's end. But like, they were very much skidding thanks to Alabama. 2017, Florida State. That was supposed to be the most hyped week one game in college football history between two national title contenders. I think it was 24-7. DeAndre Francois goes down with a season-ending leg injury. Florida State goes 500. Jimbo Fisher leaves his Christmas tree out on the front lawn and ditches them for Texas A&M, and that program has not been the same since. 2018, Louisville. I was at that one. 51-14. Louisville goes 2-10. Bobby Petrino gets fired. 2019, Duke. Duke was coming off, I believe, an 8-5 season in 2018, and they have not had a winning season since, and they just lost on the road to Charlotte to open the 2021 season. So if you're Miami right now, I'm not saying that to scare the hell out of you, although they rightly should scare the hell out of you because Alabama just does that to programs. You need to recover. You need to, I think, essentially burn the game tape from that game, because unless you play Clemson in the ACC title game, you're not going to face a group of skilled players that talented again this season. I mean, you'll face Sam Howell, quarterback-wise, who's really good, but nothing like what Alabama brought top to bottom. And you just got to get back to the fundamentals. Start tackling better. Play better defense. Rely on your 24-year-old quarterback to make smart decisions. I don't think it should be that hard for Miami to compete in the Coastal this year. That was a great stat, by the way. I don't know if you were watching it during the game. The broadcast had a trivia. How many starting quarterbacks is De'Aaron King older than in the NFL right now? And I think it was 6. So I know he's coming off a serious injury, but you guys have no excuses if you're Miami right now. You've got to play better on both sides of the ball. I think they will play better so long as they don't let that game get the best of them the way so many other week one Alabama opponents have. And you just got to go out there and play well. And, you know, in some ways, you know, Appalachian State's no pushover. That's a good team. That's one of the better group of five programs in the country. It's a primetime game this Saturday night. I think that's in some ways a good, more accurate measuring stick for Miami. They got to turn the page quickly. They can't just take their foot off the gas, say we're playing an FCS team or whomever this week, and we can slowly but surely work out these kinks. No, you got to get to work immediately, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they've got Saturday night.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those situations where you can't let Alabama beat you twice. It was a bad opener, but it's one game in the standings, and a lot of teams are going to lose to Alabama this year, and probably a lot of teams are going to lose by 31 points like that. It's just what Alabama does to teams. So, I'm curious, Miami. That's a program that sometimes when it loses like that, it sort of packs it in. I would hope that wouldn't happen after a season opener like this when you have 11 games left in the season. So we'll see how the Canes bounce back. Any thoughts on last night's game? Or Monday night's game. Louisville just looked overmatched against Ole Miss, lost 43-24. Defensive issues didn't appear to be fixed. Offense didn't really look like it had much life in that whole thing. No bounce back year for the Cards? Was that just a bad opener against an SEC team that was pretty hot that game?
I mean, if it was in a nutshell, I would be a lot more pessimistic about Louisville. I think in some ways it was just kind of more the same of what we saw all weekend from the ACC, as depressing as that sounds. Like, they were a big underdog going into that game. They kind of proved everyone right. Ole Miss overwhelmed them on both sides of the ball. I don't come out of there feeling good about Louisville, that's for sure. I'd be lying if I say there's no path back, because, again, there's always a path back in the ACC. But, you know, this is year three for Scott Satterfield there. Year one could not have possibly gone better. I think no one thought they'd win more than 3 games in the first year after Bobby Petrino left. They went 8-5, won a bowl game. And last year, they just could not protect the football. I don't think they were a bad team. They were just a sloppy team. It cost them multiple games they had no business losing, Georgia Tech chief among them. And then Scott Satterfield decided to go flirt with South Carolina for a job that he may or may not have actually had real interest in, but he completely misread the room, because no fan base and program has been spurned by disloyal coaches more in the last decade than Louisville. And there was a lot of goodwill to make up there, and they certainly didn't do that Monday night with the way they played in their season opener against Ole Miss. But I do think there is a path back for them. I do think there's talent on that roster. It's a matter of taking care of the football, playing sound on defense, and seeing how that staff kind of cohesion grows week to week, because there are a lot of new assistants on that staff. There was a bit of an exodus, at the end of last season. Dwayne Ledford, chief among them, the offensive line coach / offense coordinator, who I thought was phenomenal, left for the Atlanta Falcons. They're a program worth monitoring, much as Miami, much as a lot of these teams that had underwhelming week one performances, because there's a path back for these programs. Like, some, when you get into conference play, teams are going to win. Like, not everyone's going to lose every week. It's kind of like the opposite of the SEC, right? Like, everyone's paying their coaches $4 or $5 million and building these massive facilities, and half of them are going to lose every week. As depressing as week one was for the ACC, like, a lot of these teams are going to win a lot of games this year because they're going to be playing each other, and because eventually there's going to be a separation from the good and the bad. And this is frankly what I miss about college football, you know, in whole, is the massive overreactions we have to week one. We're here not even 2 weeks into the season talking about how down the ACC is and can any of these teams come back. And other than NC State, I haven't really painted a pretty picture for too many of them, but I do think there is a path back. I just don't know how much we learned about these teams relative to each other when they all went out and had underwhelming performances in non-conference play in week one.
Yeah, we have dwelled on the negative in this podcast quite a bit on this. So I'll skip over Duke and Charlotte and Georgia Tech losing to Northern Illinois. We don't need to revisit those. There were a couple good performances in the first week. I don't know how good these teams are, but I thought Boston College, UVA, Wake Forest all looked good. They played some patsies in the opener, so I'm not going to talk too much about them. They play some not-so-interesting teams this week, Boston College at UMass, Wake Forest, Norfolk State, and UVA hosts Illinois, which maybe could be interesting, but Illinois just loses to Texas San Antonio last week, so it took a little shine off of that. I thought Syracuse actually, showed me something. You know, I didn't expect much of the Orange this year, but
they were underdog too. Like, upset city.
Beat Ohio 29-9. Host Rutgers coming up this week. Maybe if they win that one, we'll talk a little bit more about them. But there are two teams from the opener that I do want to talk about because they have interesting games coming up this week, and I think we'll find out a lot more about them with how they play. And you mentioned one at the top, NC State. Shuts out South Florida 45-0. They go to Mississippi State this week, and the Bulldogs almost laid an egg last week against Louisiana Tech, and have a fourth quarter rally to come back in that one and win. Mike Leach team obviously can throw the ball a ton and can stress you that way. I'm interested in seeing how the Wolfpack hold up on that. That was a pick'em originally, and now I think it's 2.5 in NC State's favor on the betting line. Devin Leary looked pretty good. That was a different team when he was a quarterback for them last year. I think they could be a pretty good team with him as the quarterback there. They ran great with Zonovan Knight and Ricky Person. Obviously had the shutout, so the defense was doing something right. How do you think they can hold up in an SEC stadium against an SEC team that likes to chuck it around?
I think this is the ultimate telling point for NC State, because this is a game that past good NC State teams would find a way to lose. Regardless of how good or bad Mississippi State is this year. And I don't personally think they're all that good. This is a game on paper that the Wolfpack should win. And if they win that, you have two impressive non-conference wins under your belt. Even if you lose to Clemson in a couple weeks, you still feel pretty good about the trajectory of your season and about making a run and doing something that rarely has been done in the history of NC State. I think they have one 10-win season in the history of their program, which is pretty crazy to think about and say out loud when you look at some of the talent that's come through there. But that's reality. Dave Doran is in his ninth year there. He's about as known a commodity as there is in the ACC. And unfortunately, the book on him is they lose these games. They rarely play strong non-conference opponents. I mean, they loaded up with patsies his first 4 or 5 years there. I think 2016 Notre Dame, which was forced upon them by the ACC's agreement, was the first time they played a Power 5 non-conference opponent. So they're not used to playing in an environment like this or playing on the road like this against a Power 5 team. I'm trying to think. 2017, they lost week one in Charlotte to someone they should not have lost to and ended up costing 10 wins. I'm trying to remember who it was off the top of my head. I can look that up, but I think it was West Virginia. But I just remember thinking like that was the equivalent of North Carolina losing to South Carolina in 2015 when North Carolina was trying to make a playoff push under Larry Fedora. So I think we learn how grown up and mature this program is this week when they go into that environment. Doesn't have to be pretty. It rarely is with NC State, but that's a game where they should win. And if you get that one out of the way, things start to open up for you a little bit, especially in this league. But, I mean, they were – I'll say this. they did not leave any doubt Thursday night. And rarely have I said that about an NC State program. Even when they win the games they should win, they always kind of screw around a little bit, let the other team score points they have no business scoring, throw, you know, interceptions or turn the ball over when they shouldn't. And like you said, they ran the ball extremely well. They almost had 300 yards on the ground. Devin Leary, I think, is a good quarterback. I thought they, you know, if they had a good season last year, I thought they would have had a better season if he stayed healthy and started the, throughout the course of the season. I think they're in a really good place right now. They need to win this game to keep that program in a good place and maybe, just maybe, make a run this year.
2017 opener in Charlotte, 35-28 loss to South Carolina. Up with Marshall Furman. That's been sort of their history. Haven't had necessarily the strongest non-conference schedules. I guess if you're going to play an SEC team outside of Vanderbilt, maybe Mississippi State is the right one to catch right now. I don't know. There's not. Maybe LSU might be the right one to catch right now.
South Carolina. Yeah,
that's another one as well. The other game I was interested in the ACC this week is Pitt playing in the Johnny Majors Classic, going to Tennessee. That was also a pick'em to open, I think. I think I saw that. Now I see Pitt's favored by like 3.5, something like that. Pitt ran all over UMass in the opener 51-7. I don't know what you take from that. Other than they ran for 223 yards and 5 touchdowns, and that's maybe a little bit instructive because last year they could not run the ball. That was a very un-Pitt-like team that just, I don't know what happened. They just couldn't run the ball. They haven't been able to run the ball very well in recent times. So that's probably a solid sign going forward this year. I don't think Tennessee is necessarily all that either. I mean, they beat Bowling Green in the opener 38-6. It probably should have been more than that. I think they made a bunch of mistakes in a game that you do that against a Pitt team. I think they'll make you pay for something like that. I'm curious what you think of this matchup and another ACC team going into SEC territory.
Very similar to NC State. I mean, another program that I think more often than not can't get out of its own way. A defensive-minded coach whose programs haven't always been the soundest defensively. But a team that has good players and a team that's going into a tough environment against a team that they probably should beat. Although I'm a lot less bullish on Pitt going into Tennessee than I am NC State going into Mississippi State. I mean, NC State, the only question I have is basically history, whereas Pitt, I don't know. Last year they got off to the hot start and they played an NC State team that wasn't off to a hot start. I mean, they lost that opener of Virginia Tech by a lot. They had some early season COVID issues. That was a very, very big spread. And I just thought, like, this is the ACC. NC State's going to win that game. And sure enough, that's what they did. And, you know, they end up having a much better season than I thought, and Pitt, much worse season than I thought. But Kenny Pickett's got to be older than me and you at this point, right? I mean,
well, let's not go that far.
Forever.
Let's not go.
Maybe me. he has been there forever. And I hear a lot about him. I think he's pretty good. I don't know if he's great, but I also think if you've been in one offense and one program for that long, you know what you're getting, and you should be, if nothing else, very sound fundamentally and should be able to take care of business. Whether this game qualifies under the umbrella of taking care of business, I don't know. Tennessee historically has been the program more than any others that shoots itself in the foot. Maybe things change with the Josh Heupel era, although they had such a mass exodus from the portal when Jeremy Pruitt got fired that I just don't know what's really left on that roster at this point. Joe Milton looked good. I will say that. It was only Bowling Green, but Joe Milton looked like a different Joe Milton in Tennessee's opener last Thursday night, and that's always a raucous place to play. And there are the underlying themes. The Johnny Majors Classic, as they're calling it. There's a shared history between these two programs, even if it's not necessarily on the field against each other. It should be a cool environment. Rarely do you get to see when's the last time the ACC team played at Neyland Stadium? I know Virginia Tech played them at Bristol Motor Speedway a few years ago, which was cool in its own right, but I can't recall the last time an ACC team went into Knoxville, which is one of the best game day environments in the country. So is Pitt up for that? Can Pitt get out of its own way? Because, again, much like NC State, they've made a habit of losing games they have no business losing, and that's why they've been where they have been. I mean, they did win the Coastal a few years ago, albeit with a 7-7 final record. But we'll see. I mean, it's a program that has shown me who they are so many times in the past that I'm hesitant to put too much stock into them right now, as good as they looked in week one. I think this is a game they're capable of winning. I am surprised they are favored.
Well, it was a rough weekend for the top teams in the ACC. We'll see if this middle class of ACC teams with Pitt and NC State and BC and maybe Virginia Tech's at the top of that now after the week one win. I feel like there could be some quality programs in the middle of this conference that's maybe not going to do anything for the overall reputation, because everybody always judges how things are at the top. So, Matt, I think we've come to the end of it here. I think we covered it all. Thanks for coming on, and I don't know if you talk people off the ledge in the ACC or push them further off the ledge in how this goes, but we appreciate your perspective as usual.
I figure now's the time I should make a Brian Kelly execution joke about the ACC, but seeing how that went for him on Sunday night, I think we should just leave it be.
Yeah, it was Michael Scott-like in him delivering it. It was like him,
him
trying to tell the up-dog joke or something like that. He just completely butchers it in his own way. Well, we'll finish this off before I butcher any more jokes here. Everybody go follow Matt on Twitter at Matt_Fortuna. That's another show in the books here. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll be back again to do it next week. Please go rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. That helps us get the word out. Go subscribe to The Athletic, too. We have a great deal right now for another week, I think, maybe less than a week, 50% off. Go to theathletic.com/ACC pod to get the greatest deal. We'll be back to wrap up next week's ACC action.